WGN. Elise Glink joins us on Mondays from Think Glink Media. Click on thinkglink.com and listen for her with our friend Tom Fortino Sunday mornings at 6:30 when they talk about your wealth. Maybe not as much wealth to talk about these days. Hi, Elise. How are you?
Hey, John. Doing fine, thank you.
Where do you want to start? The Federal Reserve, interest rates? What's your news there today?
Well, just in terms of people having a little more money, if you've got stocks, you're feeling a little better, right? Because over the last 4 weeks, we've seen the market move up steadily. And in fact, NASDAQ is now about 30% above its, I'll say it a little bit of a different way. It fell all the way to just below 10,000, and now it's above 13,000. So that has been a very nice increase of about 30%. And I think people, well, not back to the high, I think people are starting to feel a little bit better about that. But on the other side, we are expecting the Federal Reserve Bank to continue to increase the federal funds rate. We heard today it's going to keep going up until inflation is around 2%.
Which isn't going to happen overnight. I mean, at least it does appear to have peaked, right?
That's correct. It does feel at the moment like we've seen the top of the inflation cycle, and it's coming back down a little bit, you know, down to about 8.5%. But other parts of that were lower. I want you to know I filled up my tank over the weekend and felt a little bit better about not paying $85 like I did the last time.
As much as we talked about gas prices going up and people refusing to go to 80 or 90 or 100 or whatever the number was, and it went up a lot very fast, it has gone down a lot pretty quickly. And I think a lot of us are noticing it, particularly since it is not impossible to find it below $4. And certainly everybody's paying less than $5. So the numbers are good right now, relatively speaking.
Relatively speaking, when you start thinking that, you know, $4.80 a gallon is a good thing, you know, we forget where it was a few years ago. But overall, a barrel of oil is down to below, well, around $89, and it was as high as $130, and that's a very significant decrease. So I think we're going to, you know, certainly see the cost of gas bounce around a little bit. More concerning is how people are struggling to pay for food right now. Other kinds of costs are going up. We're in the heart of the cherry season, John, and blueberry season. And if you go to Costco or any grocery store and you look at the price, you think, why in the heart of cherry season would I pay $5 a pound for cherries? And that's what people are facing right now.
Yeah, every now and then there's an item or two in your grocery cart that jumps out at you as like, wow, that is expensive right now.
It is. It is. On the housing market front, what we've seen is real pullback. And I there's a lot of interesting things to talk about, but the rising interest rates that we are seeing, right? So cost of buying and cost of owning is going up for a lot of people. Fewer people are looking for homes. And we're starting to see that housing market balance. New listings for sale are dropping. People have decided they're going to hang out, but overall, we're seeing more listings on the market.
This is surprising to me. Speaking of real estate, let's pick it up here in just a minute, Elise. But Redfin, I think it is, has a list of people that are leaving major cities and where they're going to. And Chicago made the list of the cities with the greatest outflow. There we are with the likes of Detroit and, some other major cities that are nice places to live. Maybe Detroit is a nice place to live. But if you said, okay, you're leaving Chicago, where are you going to go? That is surprising to me. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Elise Glink joins us on Mondays in the first half hour. Talk about that Redfin survey of people leaving big cities. What's that called? Outflow?
Outflow. The top 10 metros by outflow and their destinations is something that Redfin publishes on a regular basis. And it was really interesting. The number one place people are leaving, not a surprise, San Francisco. And where do they go? They go to Sacramento, or if they're moving out of state, they go to Seattle. Which is interesting, right? Because you're trying to figure out where you would go from a very high-cost area if you wanted to stay nearby. But it's a tremendous number of people who are looking to leave San Francisco. We're seeing a lot of tech companies, and there are people who now can work wherever, leave. And then the second most popular place was Los Angeles for outflows. The net outflow for July was 25,000 people. And that was up from a year ago. And they're going to San Diego or Las Vegas. Now, if you look at
San Diego is not an inexpensive place to move to.
No, but it is far less expensive than Los Angeles. I was actually in San Diego earlier this year for a trip, a business trip. I was astounded at how much property prices are going for out there.
High, in other words?
Very high. And, you know, but still it's nowhere near the price, you know, of moving into Los Angeles, where anything overlooking the water now in the Los Angeles metro area runs to the, wait, let me count on my fingers.
Ten million
plus.
Oh, really? Eight figures.
Eight figures, and well into the eight figures.
Of course, waterfront property is always expensive. It's expensive in Chicago, but we're not $10 million to be on the lake. And you don't have to be on the lake and to enjoy Chicago, nor Los Angeles. San Diego is the town you should not go to, because if you go to San Diego, you will want to stay in San Diego. I think that town is just lovely. New York, Washington, D.C., Boston. Seattle is number six on the list of outflow. Does that surprise you?
Well, what surprises me is that Seattle has gotten obviously very expensive, but people want to move to Los Angeles from Seattle. And then you've got people in Los Angeles moving to San Diego and Las Vegas. But when you get down the list to Chicago, and the people leaving Chicago, where are they going? Los Angeles. So that tells me that it's not really about cost. The people leaving there are leaving for either the weather or they're leaving for a job. They've got family there, because it's a much higher cost area in Los Angeles than it is in Chicago.
So that's outflow. Who are these people? I can't believe that Los Angeles, as far away as it is disconnected from Chicago. I would have guessed Indianapolis. Everybody says, well, I'll just move to Indianapolis, Indiana, and cheaper taxes, blah, blah, blah. Or Florida, I would have guessed. North Carolina, for that matter. Arizona. L.A., you're saying.
Yeah. You know what's also interesting, John, is who's moving to Chicago. So if you look at the same list by Metro Outflows, what you see is that Minneapolis, which is number eight on the list of the most people leaving, they're coming to Chicago. It's the top destination and the top out-of-state destination. Same is true for Denver. Denver is number 10th on the list, and they've got people listed as Chicago, top destination, top out-of-state destination. And, you know, and that's really interesting, because I know a lot of people who have left Chicago for Denver. I love Denver. But it was it's interesting to see that we are on the list. And so for those people who say, you know, everybody's just leaving Chicago, not true. We've got people coming also.
And can you make heads or tails of that, the Denver and Minneapolis stories?
I can't. I don't know why anybody would leave Denver. Minneapolis, maybe you want less snow, so you come here. But there's a lot of back and flow with Minneapolis as well. There's a lot of job opportunities, companies that work between the two metro areas. Maybe, who knows, John? I would love to talk to these people.
Well, you're talking to one. I mean, I lived there twice for 4 years, and it's a great town. It's a great place to raise kids. I thought the real estate market would be a lot more expensive in Chicago. That is, a lot less expensive in Minneapolis. And it was not. I guess you can always, you know, depending on where you move, find less expensive and more expensive neighborhoods. But I thought it was rather on par. What's Ruby Home? Do you have a report from Ruby Home as well?
Yeah, Ruby Home are real estate experts. They are a brokerage company. They specialize in luxury real estate. And they've started to analyze different kinds of Zillow data that, and as everybody knows, Zillow is a place that lists all the homes for sale, for rent, and then they push you to use their partners, which is fine. But they started to analyze some of the Zillow data for the last 12 months for homes that were sold at a different price than the list price. Now, what we've been seeing, and this is why I pulled this for you today, John, what we've been seeing is that homes are selling way above list price. They're selling for, have over the last 2 years, multiple bids. Sometimes you're getting as many as 50 offers on a single house, depending on the location. And Chicago's been hot as well. But what you're seeing here is that If you look at the average sales to list price, we're kind of at the bottom of their list. Like the state where people were getting the least amount, which was still over 97% of list price, was in West Virginia. And then we were giving people an average of 97.5%. In Texas, they're almost getting full price on an average, right? Almost 99% of list price. And I think what this does is show you that there are always homes that are not selling at list price, right? There are homes that sell well below to balance out the stuff that we're seeing with multiple bid offers. So just sort of an interesting take, I thought, it kind of how list price comes in and where people start the bidding process.
Well, I know that everybody, you know, since the pandemic, it's been a weird real estate market. And a lot of people were getting over-asked, and they were getting it 10 minutes after they listed the house. But are you saying that in Illinois, you say whatever you list your house for, on average, you're getting 97% of what you asked for?
Yes, that's right, which
Doesn't
I got
to
tell you.
Doesn't that sound high to you? That sounds pretty good to me.
It sounds awesome to me. So part of this is where do you list your house? And secondly, we used to say that if you could get 94% of your asking, you were doing great, and now you're well above that.
Well, okay, so it's still then a seller's market, isn't it?
It is a seller's market, but it's starting to become a little bit more balanced. And by that, we mean the number of people getting those multiple bids has dropped dramatically. People are starting to lower their price on their properties, and that's how some of these sales are still happening. And you're seeing more people jump in because they think they want to sell their homes now. They think it's a good time to sell. But I would argue that they've just sort of missed that moment because we've got mortgage rates going up, so buyers are not able to afford as much. It's kind of a mixed bag, but it's a slowing market, so more balance.
Well, you're the expert, but if I listed my home for $100,000 and you said I'll give you a 97.5, I think I would take that and be happy with it. After all, I listed it at 90, at 100, thinking I was going to have to come down a little anyway, so it doesn't sound like as bad a deal as it once upon a time was, even if it's not as good as other parts of the country. That's Elise Glink. You can find out more at thinkglink.com and listen for her with Tom Fortino Sunday mornings at 6:30. Thanks, Elise.
You bet, John.
Jim Dahlke, senior editor at ChicagoInno.com. Jim, welcome back to the show.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me.
You always follow the tech sector, and you've actually been looking at the job boards for tech jobs across the country in Chicago. What's this all about?
Yeah, you know, we've talked, you know, throughout the year about what a sort of strange year 2022 has been for the tech industry and the startup industry specifically. We've seen layoffs across many companies. We talked even last week about Groupon, how they cut about 500 employees. But the data at the tech industry level is really interesting to look at, actually. So a group called CompTIA, they analyzed the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. They found that national tech postings for tech jobs surpassed 484,000 last month. That's 3.1 million a year to date. It's an increase of 40% over the same period last year. In fact, the industry as a whole gained more than 12,000 tech workers last month and an unemployment rate of only 1.7%. So even though the headlines in the tech industry are a little ominous, the industry appears to be on solid footing. However, in Chicago, the story is a little bit different. Tech postings in Chicago fell slightly in the city. The city lost about 470 job postings over the month. So down a little bit in Chicago as the nation kind of still sort of figures out what's going on in the tech market here. But certainly big layoff stories are continuing to be part of the news. Just recently last week, GoHealth in Chicago let go about 800 employees. So a bit of a topsy-turvy market still, but overall the tech industry is still holding solid.
Well, down 400 isn't great, but what about the total number of jobs?
Yeah, so the total number remains strong. So Chicago is actually the fifth largest metro in terms of tech job postings across the country. So I'd have to get the exact number for you. But you know what that shows to me is that, you know, Chicago is starting to kind of really hold its weight in terms of tech jobs. This was not exactly a tech town 15, 20 years ago. And, you know, many criticize Chicago at the size it is, should be better when it comes to tech employment. And, you know, being the fifth largest tech employer in the country, Chicago is, definitely bodes well for the city.
Crafty doubles down on in-person work with headquarters move to Chicago Loop. Tell me about this story.
Yeah, Crafty's a really interesting one, a startup we've followed for a long time. They were all but left for dead during the pandemic. This is a startup that sold office snacks and other supplies to companies. And so when everybody went home, no office needed snacks. And so as a result, during those really months of the pandemic, Crafty laid off 100 employees, about two-thirds of its workforce. This is a startup that could have very easily sort of closed its doors, but they were able to sort of withstand. They actually pivoted instead of kind of having this asset-heavy approach where they owned all of their office snacks and supplies. They instead connected local offices to local providers, so they were no longer kind of having all this inventory. And so they were able to grow. They raised $10 million this year, and like you mentioned, they've expanded to a new office, and so they moved from their 3,500 square foot space to a 12,000 square foot space in the heart of the Loop, as this plucky startup is still growing.
So who's their customers?
Yeah, that's a great question. So they service a lot of co-working spaces. So a lot of the WeWorks in town will rely on Crafty. You know, as we are going back to the offices, a lot of tech companies, startups are trying to work a hybrid work environment. You know, they still want to have those perks and amenities for their employees who are in the office. And, hey, those employees need snacks.
I was wondering if they were going to be going door to door. The last numbers I saw on people working from the office, it's still less than 50% occupancy, even on the best of days. I think Tuesday is the highest occupancy day in the office, and it's at or just below 50%.
Yeah, well, you know, I'll tell you what, one of the loudest proponents of a remote workforce, distributed workforce in Chicago at the height of the pandemic was Cameo, the company we talk about often on this show, the celebrity shout-out app. They said, hey, we no longer want a physical office. We're going completely distributed, completely remote. Well, guess what? Just the other week, Cameo has leased in River North U.S. headquarters again. So they have a physical office space where people are coming back into the office. I think that is a trend we will start to see a little bit more of. Now, it's not going to work for everybody. It's not a one-size-fits-all. But I do think some folks at the very onset of the pandemic who were adamant about remote work are thinking, hey, you know what? Actually, let's get in the office a little bit.
One of your colleagues wrote a story about some funding done by the Pritzker Foundation. First, what's the Pritzker Foundation?
Yeah, so this is the family office of the Pritzker Group, and you know, they invest a couple of different ways. And this is they just recently led a $30 million round in Black Buffalo. This is a fascinating startup that we've been covering for the last few years. They have created a tobacco-less chewing tobacco product. So essentially what they've done is created a dip product that has no tobacco. They actually use a leaf from a cabbage plant, but it still has nicotine. It still has sort of the taste and the feel of traditional dip tobacco, but just without the additional harmful chemicals that come from the tobacco leaf itself. And yeah, just raised $30 million, a handful of interesting investors also in that round list. Firm in Chicago that invests in consumer startups, and as well as Vice Ventures, which invests in sort of, you know, quote unquote taboo businesses like chewing tobacco. So yeah, interesting one for Chicago, Black Buffalo looking to grow.
Where do they make that product? Do you know?
Yeah, they have a production facility in North Carolina, which is perhaps not surprising. The tobacco state is where they sort of manufacture, but their headquarters and offices here in the city.
Wow. Okay. So you're putting cabbage between your cheek and your gum, but it's not tobacco, so it's not unhealthy. It's not cancer causing.
Well, the nicotine in there is still going to get you, right. So they are very, you know, sort of quick to say that this is not necessarily a healthy alternative,
right.
Though they do find a lot of their users are using it to kind of wean down from traditional tobacco. It's not exactly a one-to-one comparison, but you can kind of think of it is like the chewing tobacco version of like a Juul vape, right? So it's like it's still got the nicotine in there. It still has that harmful chemical, but it eliminates some of the other harmful chemicals that you get from the traditional tobacco product.
ChicagoInno.com is where you find these kind of stories. Okay, let's visit again. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks, John.
Back into the WGN Radio Newsroom with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Bloomingdale leaders are working on a plan to reimagine the property where Stratford Square Mall currently sits. The Daily Herald reports conceptual plans call for tearing down mall structures and replacing them with a mix of residential, commercial, and recreational development. One of the plans includes street-level retail and restaurants around a pedestrian-friendly Central Village Green. One concept includes various housing options wrapping around the site. Stratford Square Mall is positioned on 275 acres, an area about the size of 11 Millennium Parks. 80% of the mall's space is currently vacant. There's no timetable for putting the vision into action. United Airlines is stepping up hiring at O'Hare Airport. Cranes reports the airline is planning to hire 300 operation workers at the airport and will hold a job fair Tuesday at the United Center. The event runs from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. The jobs include positions in customer service, de-icing, and ramp work. There are also openings for flight attendants and corporate employees. United has already hired 950 new workers in Chicago this year. The airline held a similar job fair back in April. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Okay, Steve Alexander, business of food, please.
We are sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. So how many people do you know who can say this?
I have dropped my phone into a bucket of butter a few times in the last few days.
Well, she has a good excuse.
My name is Sarah Pratt, and I am the butter sculptor.
I caught her in the 42-degree cooler at the Iowa State Fair, where she's working on that butter cow sculpture this week. Last week, she finished the one at the Illinois State Fair, and the design for that started weeks ago with a sketchbook and the fair's theme of Grow With Us in her mind.
You know, sat outside, did some reflecting, took notes, did sketches, and what I came up with was this idea of a gardener or a farmer as, you know, connected to the land and tending to the land. And of course, the dairy cow is right there behind him, him or her, snatching up a sunflower right behind as the farmer has been tending to the sunflowers.
You know, that cow seems to have a look of mischief on its face.
Yes. I think anyone that's had animals, but certainly dairy cows, can relate to that feeling.
Sarah Pratt has been sculpting for 16 years and learned from a master.
I was fortunate to be an apprentice to Norma Duffy Lyon, who was a famous butter sculptor across the Midwest and really the nation. She started in 1960. I started working with her in 1991. And even after she retired, I was able to visit their dairy farm, and she would take me in her golf cart around and point out the good cows and what which one had a strong back and a good udder and the different aspects that I should be sculpting.
Butter sculpting is a side hustle for Sarah. Most of the year, she's a special ed teacher in West Des Moines, a very rewarding job, but so is this.
I feel immensely honored to be able to be carrying on a tradition like butter sculpting and sculpting the butter cow in particular. I hope that when they visit the butter cow and they see the different displays in the dairy building, that they really do reflect on what an amazing gift dairy farmers give to us.
Sarah Pratt, the butter cow sculptor. You can see photos she shared at WGNradio.com. From the farm to your belly, oh, this is one of my favorites. It's National Lemon Meringue Pie Day. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Now we talk a little bit about furniture. Mr. Darvin, are you there? This is John Williams. How are you today?
I'm doing fantastic, John. Thank you.
That's Will Harris. He's the president at Darvin Furniture. Tell us about your business. You're on South LaGrange Road, right?
That's right. Just one store, but 102 years old and welcoming new customers all the time.
How's the furniture business these days?
The furniture business is strong. There has been a slight pullback in demand, but overall, all the fundamentals are good.
Was it especially good during the pandemic? Are you one of those businesses with people readjusting their lives that did pretty good in 2020, 2021?
Yes, that's absolutely true. We hit new, new record levels of sales. And some of the things that helped us, you know, the tremendous selection here, also our tremendous in-stock position helped propel those sales forward.
In-stock position. You had
in-stock position, yes.
Yeah, you had a lot of stuff sitting there that people didn't have to wait for, huh?
That's exactly right. I mean, and when the pandemic first started, we had a tremendous in-stock position with home office. And believe me, that was wonderful.
What was the day like then? Walk me through one of those days where you went, holy cow, this is happening.
Well, we took a fairly pragmatic approach early on, and we at that time started recognized that furniture and mattresses were a necessity. So we opened up a call center here to assist folks. Whereas other stores might have been closed or hard to access, we opened up a call center to help those folks out during that period. And it's something that I'll always be proud of.
A call center for incoming calls to buy your stuff.
Customer care call center. Yep. In a closed store.
Wow. Yeah. So how's business now? Because I would imagine that restocking inventory is a challenge.
We have been in a good inventory position now for quite some time. So we're gradually moving through that. And as far as our special order business, some of our brand name manufacturers have returned to a more traditional lead time, you know, between 8 and 12 weeks. So that's also good. We're one of the first companies in this area to be able to offer that in terms of, with special order options as well.
Describe the furniture. I mean, I suppose you got a little bit of everything, but is there a niche that you guys have? What kind of furniture do you all feature?
Well, there's really a broad array. Our store is over 200,000 square feet. It's the largest furniture retailer here in Chicagoland, and we do have a little bit of everything. Our designers, our merchandisers, they're picking out product for this market. It's not like we're a national chain store and, it's picked out in some distant place. The advantage you have when you come here is you'll find the latest in-stock styles right here on display at Darvin.
Yeah, you're in Orland Park. So what about this comparison? You are the Apt Furniture. You are the Apt Appliances of the furniture business.
You know, that is something we hear frequently, and that is a great compliment. They have a wonderful business, and we're very happy to share the same reputation that they have.
Do people have money to buy furniture right now? How does that go?
Yeah, our stores are very busy. Our store is very busy, and the demand environment, it's not what it was last year, but we continue to welcome in droves of new customers into the store in addition to our, second, third, fourth, even fifth generation customers that continue to shop here year after year.
How's a business like yours for staffing?
Well, we're in pretty good shape. We do have openings. We have openings in customer service, dispatch, and our order analyst departments. But generally, we're in pretty good shape. You know, when you come to work at a place like Darvin, many people will stay for 10, 20, 30. I think we have 2 40-year employees. And when you have someone with that kind of tenure, it's a very different shopping environment. It's a very different customer service environment. We're able to use that expertise to benefit our customers.
Yeah. You know, everybody seems to be buying online. Do folks want to come into the store? I can't imagine buying a sofa or a desk. I'm not kicking the tires on the thing, right?
You know, our online business is just tremendous. We've had a tenfold increase since 2019 with our online business. But here again, we're not selling nationwide online. We're really focusing on the area that we service, which is, from Northwest Indiana up to around Wisconsin and all of Chicagoland. So our online business is great, but of course, welcoming new customers and current customers into the store is what we do best.
Hmm. Well, it sounds like you're in the right place at the right time. Congratulations, Will. I'm happy for you guys. It's good to see businesses locally doing well. One last thing. How many folks do you all employ? How big is your business?
It's at this moment, I believe it's 297 employees, just under 300 full-time employees here at Darvin.
Well, Harris is the president over there. You can visit darvin.com. They're in Orland Park. Continued success, Will. Thanks for your time today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you so much, John. I appreciate it.